Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for needlework artists. And our artist this week from Sandy's Finishing, Sandy Higgins. Welcome, Sandy.
Hi there, Gary. Thank you for asking me. I've been a fan for a long time.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you for that. Yeah. No, looking forward to this one. Get to learn a little bit about finishing here and needlepoint finishing, which since I'm a lover of the needlepoint, I got stuff to learn here. So it's going to be great. Yeah. Appreciate it. Yep.
Well, there are a lot of finishers out there. I'm not the only one in town or the expert.
Well, you're our expert.
I do my best.
You're our expert at the moment. So how's that?
Okay. That's fine.
Plus you've done gay and stuff. So that makes you more expert than most, I'm saying.
I've done most of her hearts.
Yeah.
And some of the jeweled crown pieces that she's done.
Oh,
yeah.
Beautiful work.
She's a beautiful stitcher. Yeah, she's an excellent stitcher.
Yeah, I have no doubt of that. No doubt. Superb designer, but I have no doubt that the stitching is spot on every front. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember many years ago, she was doing a book on Northwest designs. And she had done a huge wall hanging. I had to block it. And I don't think it was off an eighth of an inch, the whole thing. So that 6x40 something. It was just huge.
It was how big?
It was over 36x48, I'm sure.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't more than an eighth of an inch off? Wow.
I don't think so. No.
That's something, you know, that bringing that up, that's something that is one of my sticking points is I really hate finishing a needlepoint piece. I mean, cross stitch and other things on linen, you know, that's easily squared up. No big deal. That's just patience. But needlepoint canvas, it's just one of my things. I hate finishing a needlepoint canvas and then having it be out of square. And I was just dealing with that the other day. Well, we did a whole thing on it where I got some canvas that itself was out of square, and I have a piece right now that I'm actually going to block and square it up before I stitch on it because it drives me nuts. Am I just being crazy?
You know, I never thought of it until I listened to you on that podcast.
Oh, okay.
So
I'm nuts. Okay.
No. It's how you feel about it. I never thought to ever check canvas to see if it was square or not. I just tack it down and crank it out as hard, you know, as tight as I can and stitch away. And I would say almost everything needs blocking. When you make a garment at the end, you need to press the hem and tidy everything up. So that's why I do. There are some ornaments that I get that are small enough and the stitcher is so perfect that they don't need blocking. But anything bigger, pillows, et cetera, always has to be blocked.
Okay, so I'm really kind of out on the outer edge then in thinking about that.
Yeah, but if you don't want anybody messing with your work after you're finished with it, I think it's a good idea to do what you do.
Yeah, sometimes I just obsess over things like that, and I think I should really just dial it back and move on. But, it was the Debbie Rowley piece where I got that center done and it just was not square. It was visually not square. And then when I looked at the canvas, I mean, it was off by quite a bit. And I just thought, you know, that's just going to drive me nuts. But then, you know, like I said in that show, other canvases weren't square either. And I've had many needlepoint people say to me since then, you know, I just don't worry about it. Just stitch and get done with it. And
yeah. Well, I'm going to go test a few pieces of canvas and see if they're off. It perks my curiosity.
Yeah. I don't know, you know, and I bought blocking, a blocking board. It's actually, I think it's really thick foam. I haven't actually used it, like puzzle pieces that go together. But I'm also hesitant to block the canvas because you have to get it wet, because the one that I blocked, or squared up as much as it is for Debbie's piece, it softened the canvas. And so that's changed the stitching experience for me, in that I have to be careful how tight I pull that, because the, the canvas threads are not as stiff as I'm used to. So, you know, because I weakened the sizing, but I think I over wet it when I was doing it. You know, that was my fault. So when I go to block this other piece, I'm going to be more careful. But you know, I like to be able to yank on that needlework, that needlepoint canvas, pretty good when I'm stitching. So, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, when you go to block, you get a spray bottle and just spritz the canvas and lightly spritz your needlework, and then pull like mad when you pin it down, and get your angle ruler there to make sure it's square.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of pins are you using?
They're just pins that came with it. Have a T shape on the top.
Oh, okay. You really need a thumbtack, or I have push pins that are stainless steel.
Oh.
And my husband made my blocking boards. They're made of pine, and he made them 36 by 50 something. And so I can get several pieces done at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And we just start with the L-square and pull on the edge and take off the tape that's on the edge.
Yeah.
You know, and then pin it out and square it up. And as it dries, the canvas will re-stiffen. And as it dries, if the needlework still ripples a little, that means you have not pulled the canvas enough.
Oh, okay.
So what we do is we go back and readjust the pins and pin some more and maybe spritz it a little more and then let it sit till it dries.
So it's really more muscle than water.
Oh, yeah, lots of muscle.
Okay.
you should see my daughter when she gets her foot up on the edge of the table and pulls.
Oh, really? Oh, my.
But, you know, we see all sorts of stitching. Nothing like you and me, probably, who are fairly decent, we're decent stitchers. But there are those people that just go anywhere with their stitches.
Yeah.
And if you get a geometric, the different segments will pull against each other. It depends on the threads. Krynek's really hard to block out. It's very stiff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's probably not much give in that.
Yeah. No, there isn't.
Yeah. So you're
the other thing. I was going to say, the other thing you have to be careful in blocking is make sure that their threads are dye-proof.
Mm-hmm.
So they won't run. There's nothing more upsetting for me than to come back an hour later to check the work and see the dye running into the canvas, into the surrounding threads. There's not much you can do, really.
Oh, yeah, that's got to make your heart just stop, yeah. Oh.
So the customer should tell the finisher or the intermediary, I used, an over-dyed thread and it's not color fast. Please don't use water on this.
All right, in that instance, then, what do you do?
I would use a steam iron, but not put it directly on the needlework itself. You can soften the canvas. You could spritz the canvas itself with water and pull. You may have to block twice then to get it into shape. But we do, you know, if it's wool, you can wash things.
Yeah.
We've taken old needlework and washed it.
So for you, it's a wooden board. and push pins, stainless steel push pins.
And I cover the board with a gingham fabric.
That's interesting to know. Well, that helps me. Well, I mean, because I am going to do this canvas that I have for the next project. I'm going to do it before I do any stitching. So that should be a little easier, I would think.
Yeah. Oh, I'd like to hear how it comes out.
So would I.
Let us know.
Oh, I will. I will. Well, I just, that's just the way I am. And I think it comes from the first needlepoint piece I ever did was wool and tent stitch. But I was not taught to do basket weave. And so I just merrily stitched along. I had it on a scroll frame. Just merrily stitched along, just doing tent stitch. Just, you know, happy-go-lucky. And when I took it off that frame, boy, it just
was askew, yes.
Oh, it was more than askew.
Well, that's how I started.
Yeah.
Half cross, fill in the background with the center all done, and wool thread. That's all we had.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. Oh, I remember those. You could buy the center all done, and then you just filled in the background. I never understood that.
Right. Well, that's what came out of Europe and came to, you know, that's what we had in this country back when I was a little girl. And even when I started up again in the 60s to stitch, there weren't that many painted canvases or threads. Mostly we had pattern and yarn.
Yeah. See, I started, that would have been for me in the early 70s, actually mid 70s. So, and all I knew then was yarn, but there were some painted canvases, and, you know, I did mostly dimensions kits, which were another experience, but it was all wool, and, but yeah, that first one I did, when it went all askew, all right, there's got to be a better way. We can't be having that, because, I mean, I could just tell that there was no way that was going back to square. It didn't matter what you did with it.
Right.
I remember seeing those where somebody did the design. All I could think was, wait, they did all the fun part. That's not fair. You know, why would I pay for somebody to do the fun part? And then I got to do I always thought that was just drudgery, just doing the back. Cause that was just tent stitch or basket weave is, just fill it in and,
right.
You know, it's like, that's just boring. Yeah.
That's the way it was back then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We don't do much. Don't see much, wool other than for crewel. Don't see that much anymore.
There are some companies. I don't work with it very much, so I'm not up on all those threads.
Yeah.
When I, wool like we're used to, like a tapestry wool. There are other wools. I can't think of them off the top of my head, but they're finer.
Yeah.
Delalusa, I think that's wool. Yeah, but they're real fine.
Yeah. So. Yeah, those basically, in this day and age, in comparison, pretty coarse wools that we used to use. And, yeah, it's what we had and it's what was done, so that's okay.
But there's lots of people still doing crewel, and they need the wool for that.
Right. But that's a much more refined wool thread, though, right?
Well, the Appleton wool.
Yeah.
You could always split the pattern and down into, there were three threads. You could break it down and make it thinner.
Yeah. Yeah, I've only done one crewel piece, and that was a while ago, so not right up on the wools of the day. Yeah.
I'm not either.
Yeah. So how did you get started? Were you a little girl? You mentioned that, a little girl when you started. What was your first exposure to needlework?
My mother was a beautiful seamstress. I remember her teaching me needlework, working on the half cross. on the fill in the background. But I, more than doing the one piece, I don't remember doing anything else. And she did teach me to sew. I made a lot of clothing, and my in-laws gave me a sewing machine for wedding present. So I made most of my clothes. And then when we started having children, I made their clothes. And I took several tailoring courses, so I learned to tailor.
Oh.
Taught myself how to knit. Can't crochet, and I can't macrame.
Well, there's no particular loss there.
So I don't know. Then I started back into needlework and needlepoint, and I was a young mother with a passel of kids, and I couldn't afford finishing, and that's why I sent you the picture of the tennis racket cover. And my husband and I played tennis, so I wanted to make covers, and I figured out how to make a tennis racket cover with a zipper and a gusset and everything. And then my friend started her store. In fact, it was the Needle Nook of La Jolla. And it was the original owner that I made. She wanted me to make pillows, and I said, well, I know how to make cording. Well, I have a finisher that's not very supportive of me, but she's glad to teach you. So she showed me a basic pillow knife edge. And then I got out my old sewing manual, and that showed how to make some pillows. And I just started from there. It was trial and error. And I guess I had to learn to find filler for the pillows. They didn't have pillow forms back then. She used kapok, which is a fluffy fiber that comes off of a kapok tree, and I had to make my own forms. I'd get bags of this stuff from some wholesaler here in San Diego. And that went the way of all things, because polyester came in and they started making pillow forms.
Yeah.
So
you had, so when you started this though, you did have a leg up in that you knew how to sew fabric together and make it into shapes and cut it and so on and so forth. So you did have some weapons in your little arsenal before you started, at least, right?
Yeah, I would say I was a fairly decent seamstress.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing great, but yeah, I knew how to make cording and how to join it on the bias and making sure the nap was all going in the same direction. And I learned how to stuff a pillow pretty well, not to make them dog-eared.
Yeah, that's kind of key, isn't it?
Yeah. And I just kept refining my techniques. And most of the pillows I made were just knife edge. But then I had to make a box pillow. And that was really complicated. The first one took me 6 hours to make.
Oh, my.
And I thought, there's got to be an easier way to do this.
Yeah, I would think.
So I figured out a way to measure and mark and cut and sew. And from then on, they've been working. And not too long ago, I asked my daughter if she still used that method. And she said, of course, mother. Because she makes all the pillows now.
Oh, okay. Okay. So were you learning back when you started with that shop? Boy, I think I've been to that shop a long time ago. I think I have.
It's still there, and I've been around almost 50 years, so they've been around about the same amount of time.
I think I have. I think I wandered in there on a business trip one time a long time ago. Yeah, because when you said that, it rang a bell. Because I remember I had an extra day, and I remember spending it in La Jolla, just driving around, seeing. I'm pretty sure I went in there. Yeah, yeah. Were you learning on customer projects?
Yep. I've never had an unhappy customer. I shouldn't say that. Nobody is ever never or perfect, but the few things that people have not liked, I've reconciled.
Yeah.
But generally, I did pretty well, I guess. That, somebody was looking over me.
Yeah. Well, that's impressive because, I mean, that's an extra level of pressure when it's, you know, the shop's customer and you're going to finish it. Oh, man, that would make me nervous.
No, everything has to pass inspection before it goes out of the door.
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't have fabrics. Originally, I asked people to bring fabrics, and then I started stocking fabric. And now we must have over 50 different colors of velveteen and moirés. Mm. And I started carrying silk lately. And I have another fabric called Protégé. It's very nice upholstery type fabric for pillows.
Yeah, I bet that's a real progression over time of bring your own fabric and I'll put it together to I don't know what I want. Can you make something up? And then you start shopping for fabrics and I'm sure the inventory just grows over time.
Yeah. Well, then you buy 1 yard, 5 yards, 10, 15. You have to buy 25-yard bolt. So I have a room full of fabric. and then I have boxes of quilting fabric, calicos that some customers like those on their ornaments. And I've inherited a couple of stashes from a deceased finisher's family, gave me all of her things. And I have trims and ribbons, et cetera.
Yeah. So is it any more people you just get the finished piece and maybe a suggestion for a color that goes on the back and then you're left to it? Or do you get pretty specific instructions from people?
Well, all the needlework stores that I deal with have fabric samples of mine.
Oh.
So the customer can pick the fabric that they want and the colors. Sometimes they'll say, let the finisher choose. And my daughter Margie, as I said, makes all the pillows now and the large stockings. And she will consult either by phone or email, text with pictures with the customer. So they have an input on how it will be put together in the colors.
Mm-hmm.
So we give a lot of personalized service.
Yeah, yeah. So how does your business evolve? You start out working for the store, doing a few, and does it quickly ramp up to a steady stream?
Oh, no.
No?
It kind of grew gradually, maybe one or two pillows a week, a few a month. And then the store was fairly new also. So as her business grew, my business grew. I had to teach myself how to do ornaments, which wasn't too difficult. And when I was learning how to do or working on the pillows, I'd buy from a local upholsterer, and I asked her if she would teach me. She says, "No, but you can stand and look at what I do. Watch me while I work." So if I had questions, she answered them. So that's mainly how I evolved. It just kind of grew like Topsy, you know, and then my friends would hear, "Can you do this?" Or another shop would become acquainted with my work. And so it just grew. And, you know, when I started out, there were maybe 12 needlepoint stores in San Diego, needlepoint cross-stitch stores.
Mm-hmm.
In the county, the only store in the whole San Diego County is the Needle Nook of La Jolla.
That's the only one left, huh?
The only one left, and it's one of the very high-end stores in the whole country.
Yeah.
They have two stores. One side is all canvas. The other side is all threads.
Oh, my.
So it's like going into a candy store. It's wonderful.
Oh, my.
And I don't finish everything, you know, all styles and shapes. And I don't do leather work. I don't frame. I'm getting to the point where I personally don't want to do tote bags, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Well,
But we do pillows and ornaments. I do eyeglass cases, do a lot of brick covers. I've done tapestries. You asked me, mentioned what the most unusual thing, and I couldn't think, and I think through old photograph albums. My husband does a lot of woodworking, and he's helped me make stands and that kind. He has made them for me. But we made Torah covers, and the Torahs are the scrolls that they have at temple. So I had two ladies wanted to make Torah covers, and these were big. They were probably 30 inches by, I can't remember how much, but they wrapped around an oval top made out of wood. And then there were two holes in the top of the wooden piece to where the top of the Torah could spindle could come through. So my husband made the top and milled the wood for that. And then I lined the fabric pieces and we wrapped them around this and attached them to the oval wooden thing. And then the Torahs were kept inside. So that was one of the most unusual things that I've made.
Had to drag your husband into that one.
Oh, I don't drag, I ask, and he's
Oh.
sure, whatever you want. He
Yeah,
charges me. I
smart
have to pay. It's a business, Sandy.
man. All right, okay.
Yeah.
So this as this grows, then there must be a point where you say, all right, we're going to make this a business, and this is pretty much going to be full time for me. Did that just kind of sneak up on you, or did you sit down one day and say, there's enough business coming in, let's pursue this?
No, it just started like from the beginning. And my husband said, well, if you're going to do this, you have to make an accounting for it. And I had to go get a business license for San Diego. And because I was stuffing pillows, I had to get a bedding, BEDDING, bedding license from the state of California.
Wait, really?
And yeah, oh yeah, for the little tags that are on your mattress, that's what that is.
Oh, so
It's got a
you
different.
had to go through that whole regulatory thing just because you're stuffing pillows.
Right. And
Wow.
I pay. That's an expensive thing to have every 2 years that gets paid. The city license isn't very much money. But it just grew. And I didn't have to make a business to live from. It's just been kind of pin money. As my husband says, at the end of the year, when you do all the accounting, I make about $4 an hour.
Okay.
And
There's the reality.
the people complain about the price of finishing pillows, but I think finishing pillows is much less expensive than framing.
Isn't
But I, yeah.
that just sums it up right there. Do you ever, we've all been asked, do you ever sell your needlework? No, you can't afford it. And
No.
because the prices people pay, $4 an hour.
Yeah. And they don't, they, it isn't just making the pillow. It's, if like the needle nook, I go pick up from there, or sometimes one of their clerks lives near me. She'll bring it on her way home from work. But I have the process of checking it in, and then I have to block it, and we make it. It's got all the fabrics and the stuffing. Then it's either mailing it back out to customers or taking it to the store.
All time,
I do have a couple ladies who help me with the ornaments now. I can't do it all. And if I didn't have that kind of help, I would have to cut back quite a bit. I have to, of course, I pay them. And they need to, they're not doing it as a living either. Both of them are doing it as supplemental income, but and they like to do it, and they of course, they do a good job, or I wouldn't employ, well, I don't employ them. They're contract workers.
Right.
But because they don't work full time or anything, and they work at their homes.
Mm-hmm. See, you've gotten to the point, because I think every small business gets to that point where it can grow, but I'm going to have to involve other people, or I can, you know, stem it back and have it just be me. So you got to that point and decided then you've got your daughter involved and these other ladies to expand, even though they're contract workers, you've got to still make sure that the quality that comes out of it matches what your standards are. So you had to go through that mental process of saying, all right, there's enough work here. I need to add people and go through that whole process. That's, that's a huge leap right there.
Yeah, it is. And that's why I've really kept myself small. I didn't want employees. There are a lot of big finishing houses and they employ a lot of people to do different finishing techniques. Some of them specialize, I think. I know one of my ladies does one thing very well. And So I funnel it all to her. And another one does mini socks very well. So I do these things myself, but I parcel it out.
Right, right.
And we're not as busy this year. And then I used to travel at least 3 months of the year at various times. So I would be leaving the business and coming back and having to catch up.
Yeah.
So this year's been kind of nice to be home and not have to be always scrambling to get ready to leave or catch up when I get home.
Right, right.
Yeah,
I travel quite a bit for my regular job. Certainly a trip a month. And I know that feeling of either work while you're going, or in your case, you probably can't do that. But for me, it's work while you're traveling, or scramble ahead of time, or scramble afterwards. But yeah, I know that feeling. And chunks of time come out of it. And this year I haven't had to travel at all. Matter of fact, this week there's a trade show I would normally have to travel to, and I'm just going to sit at my chair at my desk and just watch it. And it's really nice. It's really nice.
It is. Actually, when we travel, we have timeshare. When we travel like to Arizona or Oregon, something like that, or Northern California, I take my work with me.
Mm-hmm.
Pack up all the finishing items and take the sewing machine and off we go. And when we got where we were staying, I would work a couple hours every day.
Yep.
Yeah.
Just to keep it going. Yeah.
To keep it going. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love it.
Well, I think that's the thing right there. When you talked about $4 an hour and the ladies that do contract work for you, they enjoy doing it. You know, that really is at the very core of it. You have to enjoy this kind of work and enjoy finishing these pieces, or I don't think any sane person would do them.
No. And my husband said, if I didn't do this, I'd be off volunteering for something else.
There you go. Yeah.
Or I'd stitch for myself.
Well, now there's a crazy idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A couple of years ago, I decided I wasn't going to work in the evening anymore. So I usually try and stitch for an hour or so after dinner for myself.
Yeah. So now is this these days, this is something where you get up in the morning, have breakfast and start a work day of finishing. Is that where you're at?
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And sometimes I take time off to clean or cook. Our daughter has done all our grocery shopping for us during COVID. So we've been very fortunate that not having to go into stores.
Yeah.
I miss going to a fabric store.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, there got to be a lot of inspiration comes out of those kinds of trips.
Yeah. Well, when you need to look for something and you can't get there to do it.
Right.
And I'm not a good online shopper.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So how does your daughter get involved? Does she learn to stitch when she was young and kept going? I mean, that's So many people, their kids have no interest in what they do. How does she get involved in this?
Well, as a teenager, she learned about her sewing. And actually, she took a class from Gay Ann when Margie was 16. She took a class from Gay Ann at the Needle Nook, and on embroidery. And Margie is a very good embroiderer, and she's a good stitcher. And she needed an income, and she was interested in helping me. And she started sewing on. I had a little tiny travel sewing machine, and so she would work on that. At that point, I think she was living out on her own, and so she'd come home and do the work. Then she had to move back in for a while, so she was really motivated to work. And she's just, you know, over the years, and then she got married. Her living room is her sewing room.
Oh, my.
So over the years, she's done more and more, and it's gotten so she does the pillows and the big stockings. And she's done some wall hangings. Mm-hmm. And so she's taken over that, and she's done a lot of the ordering, helped me with that. She's been my right hand. I couldn't do it without.
Yeah, that was the sense. That was the sense I was getting is good thing she's along for the ride, yes.
Yeah. She keeps wanting me to do other things because I won't be here forever. In other words, I won't be here forever. She's looking for her own interest in the future.
Yeah.
I'll have, you know.
Well, that's got to be a comfort to know that what you've built is, you know, I mean, we're all getting older, but, you know, that to know that what you've built, that one of your children wants to keep it going, that's got to feel really good.
Yeah. It is a good feeling. I'm glad I have her around. Yeah. And she's trying to train somebody else to help with the pillows because she would want to have somebody else help her if I wasn't around.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. That's great. So that the business keeps going. That's fantastic.
Keeps going. Yeah.
Yeah. So she does stockings and pillows. And you have someone who focuses on mini stockings, so ornaments is kind of your thing?
The ornaments and the mini socks, as they say, eyeglass cases, brick covers, bell pulls. Don't get many of those anymore. And we do straight just blocking for people if they want to take it to a framer.
Mm-hmm.
Scissor cases. I do some linen and cross stitch if it comes my way. Trying to think a couple of the unusual things I've done. Oh, we do Margie does talus bags.
Oh.
And I do the yarmulkes. And I've made some of the prayer shawls or attached needlework to an existing prayer shawl.
Uh-huh. Well, that's an interesting world, of particularly for the Jewish faith, the various things, because those items have special long term significance for the family. So that's got to be, I don't know, heartwarming, fun, enjoyable to be able to create those things for people.
Yeah, they're heirlooms. They become heirlooms in their families. Yeah. I'd done pyramids for a church I think it was in Los Angeles. Inserted the needlework into the damask so they could hang from the not the altar, the lectern, mm-hmm. the pulpit. And I've done kneelers for several churches, quite a few. Or pillows for there was one church that wanted pillows. I suppose they were hard wooden benches, so they had something soft to lean against.
Oh, that's the pillows in a church. That seems like just ongoing hassle. I don't know.
Yeah. And I've made a lot of three-dimensional animals.
Uh-huh.
I think I sent you a picture of a bear, a little bear.
Yes.
I worked with that designer. Well, I met her when I first started finishing. She lived in La Jolla, and she was a professor of something at San Diego State, and she got into stitching, and then she thought, I can do better than what's on the wall in the needlepoint store. So she started designing and had a really terrific business. Unfortunately, she passed away several years ago, and somebody else bought the line, and they sell most of her things now.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's Associated Talents bought her line.
Oh.
But they, I don't think they sell the bears. That was a bear with a pouch, so it was called a Roo Bear. And then she developed a rabbit. They call it a Rabaroo. And then she made an elephant, but that didn't have a pouch.
Oh, okay.
But they were really cute animals. I loved making those. Yeah. And well, I've done some of the Tapestry Fair and the TS animals, too.
Uh-huh. Those got to be fun because they're so different to do.
They are.
Yeah.
Take a lot of time, but they're fun.
Well, yeah, yeah. I'm sure there's a lot of fiddling with those things, without a doubt. Yep.
Yeah.
So what? Let's give some people some tips. I mean, you wrote a book about finishing, which you know, that is still available, still in print. That's been around for a while. Have you done how many versions of that? Have you done?
Well, I first printed it in 1991. And I revised it on the third printing in 1998. And then in 2010, I revised it. And Margie wrote a section on the talus bags. And I expanded. Oh, I added standing boxed figures and a couple of other things. So it's, and then I keep reprinting it. The last printing was 2018, but no new revisions.
Yeah.
I'd love to do a major revision. I need to reprint soon because I'm down to 50 copies. I have a distributor wholesale. It's Danji.
Mm-hmm.
And then retail through Amazon at Needlecraft Cottage in San Diego. The book can be purchased retail.
Yeah. And so what that book will take anyone who is of the mind to do finishing step by step through a variety of different finishes?
Right. I cover blocking, all sorts of pillows, ruffles, twisted cord trims, making cording, how to close the pillow, how to put a zipper in it. And on Christmas ornaments, they're hard and soft, mounting on a ball or an egg shape. And then the large stockings and a box stocking, like a box pillow, but a box stocking. And that box piece could be sheared or gathered.
Mm-hmm.
Miniature stockings, all sorts of... Oh, and the other projects are the brick covers and eyeglass cases, bell pulls, oh, coasters.
Oh,
and
yes.
how standing weighted figures, either soft stuffed or boxed. I have dollhouse rugs in there. I haven't made one of those in a long time. Talus bags. And then I have a section on how to make chair ties and simple tassels and twisted cording and how to make up to 3 or 4 color cords.
Oh.
It takes a couple pairs of hands, but it's yeah, not too I'll difficult bet. To do.
That's fancy cords.
Yeah. Then there's something called the binding stitch. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. It's an edge finishing, or you can join two pieces of needlework. And in the 70s, a lady named Joan Young wrote a small booklet about the binding stitch and how to use it. And it's kind of gone out of style, but recently I presented a program to our needlework chapter on how to do it because we were making the Ork box that Marilyn Owen had designed. Mm-hmm. And she puts it together with the binding stitch.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is a book to have if you want to do finishing really of any kind, but particularly needlepoint. This is a really useful book then.
Yeah, and it relates to any kind of needlework.
Yeah.
Cross stitch or crewel. I had a customer call me this morning and she says, "I have your book," and I sat down and read it, "but I really think you ought to make the ornament." So if nothing else, it teaches the customer what is needed to take to the finisher, how you should prepare your needlework, and what you should think about when you go to stitch something, like getting colors that will match backing fabrics, stitching with over-dyed threads or not, letting the finisher know.
Yeah.
Tying off your threads securely. If it's a pillow or a stocking, adding a couple of extra rows of stitching for the seam allowance. On hard ornaments, I don't like extra rows because it's too bulky with a turn under.
Uh-huh.
So, there are all sorts of little hints in the book related to finishing.
Yeah. So when it comes to things that that cause you difficulty when you're finishing, I would imagine threads that are not secured is kind of one of the top ones.
Correct. And I hate to see all these and unstitched areas or lots of missed stitches. I usually turn them back into the store to have the customer finish, stitch them.
Mm-hmm.
If it was Aunt Mary or was doing it where she had dementia, there was one piece like that. Why they just said, make it up the way it is. It was hers. They wanted it as she did it. But most people are grateful to have you say, "Oh, you've missed so many stitches."
Mm-hmm.
They'd be glad to fill it in.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the other things that people should watch out for if they want to make sure that what they send in will finish up properly?
Oh, clean hands as you stitch. And clean needles, especially on white. You get this streaking and you wonder what happened. It could be the needle. It could be the oils in your hand if you haven't washed your hands before you stitch. Making sure all the threads are anchored. And let us know about
over-dyed threads. Yeah.
Over-dyed threads. Those are the biggest problems, I think.
Yeah.
And work on a frame if you can and make sure, a lot of the stores will put about four or five tacks on a side when they mount up the canvas for you. But you really need to have tacks right next to each other practically.
And yeah. Yeah. I see that. I don't think people appreciate how many tacks you really need to have to hold a piece of needlepoint on a stretcher bars or anything. You really got to tack it down. Yeah.
And make sure your stretcher bars are straight. You can put them all together, but they could be askew. I put mine into the corner of a wall or against a door to make sure that they're at true right angles.
Mm-hmm.
Or inside an L ruler corner. And it's good to have a second person to help pull. Get a pair of pliers to pull as you tack. I personally like to staple. I don't like tacks.
Hmm.
But having an extra pair of hands to pull when you're tacking makes a big difference.
So not only to get it tight, but then make sure it's square. So, okay. I'm just looking for reasons that I'm not nuts.
No. And we all have our quirks.
I've got that's just the tip of the iceberg, trust me.
Hey, we're here to have fun.
That's right. So do you like when thread ends come out, try to save them? I mean, you must get pretty good at doing that, re-anchoring.
I try to if I can. I don't do a lot. People put away waste knot way out in the corner, you know, out of the margin. We do zigzag needlework before we cut it out. It might not hold everything. So make sure you weave those threads back in.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. And I don't usually add extra stitches back in. And it's only one or two.
Uh-huh.
But if there's a lot, I send it back or let them know. And do they want to, you know, fill in the stitches?
Yeah, yeah.
That takes a lot. It takes a lot of time to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a decision you have to make. Yeah, is if this is just a little bit here and it'll take me a couple hours, that's one thing. But I'm not going to redo the whole thing. You do it. Yeah.
And I think the other thing customers can do is think ahead how they're going to use the item, and are they going to make, say, a second pillow, buy enough fabric if they're purchasing the fabric for two pillows, or let the finisher know that down the line that, oh, I'm going to have a number two or three pillow. Will you have enough fabric?
Oh.
Will it change dye lots?
Mm.
You know, and buy enough trim for the second pillow, say, if you're going to do something like that.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, so that's good to know. So I want two pillows sitting on my couch when I'm done. Here's the first one. Let's make sure that we can match it when I get the second one done, which could be a year from now. So,
or five or ten.
Yeah. Yeah, that. Yeah. Well, that's a good thing to know. Think ahead on those things. I'm sure that you get all kinds of quality of stitching. I'm sure you've seen the full spectrum. I remember one time I saw one in a store that had been turned into frame, and oh, the mess on the back was just. I just kind of stood there. I'm sure my jaw dropped to the floor. Like, how are you ever going to frame that and have it look straight? So, you know, when people say, oh, I don't worry about the back, but at some point you do have to pay attention to what's going on in the back so you don't get big lumps and chunks.
Oh, yes. Yeah. But not much I can do with it.
Yeah. Yes,
I use knots to anchor threads on the back of my work, but you have to make sure that. Actually, I use a knot, and then I try and cut it off later after I've really anchored the thread.
Mm-hmm.
And actually watching you, I've learned to do more pin stitches and use them more frequently.
That's a handy little thing to know, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And yeah, and people wonder, will those hold? Go ahead and try and pick one out. Good luck.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah.
Yeah,
or French knots, they don't pick out.
No, they don't. No, not very easily, no. Yeah, so what are you seeing these days? More people have more time. I wish I was one of those people, more time to stitch. Are you seeing people do more painted canvas? Are you more ornaments? What are the trends you're seeing in terms of what's coming into you?
Well, this year, because of COVID, everybody's dragging everything out of the closet or the drawers and stitching. I can't believe it. Lots and lots of ornaments and lots of old canvases they're stitching in for pillows. I think a lot of people are having things framed.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of ornaments this year.
Uh-huh.
I had a wall hanging come back to me that she'd been working on for 5 or 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
And because of COVID, it came out of the closet, uh-huh. You know, and she finished it. Yeah. I don't see bell pulls anymore. Very rarely. I used to do a lot of those.
Mm-hmm.
Things come and go.
Yeah. That's always kind of been on my list out there in the distant, because because there used to be a lot of bell pulls, like you said, and I've always thought it would just be really neat to have one, just because they're such a unique piece of needlework, and to hang them up, and they just they've always just appealed to me, and you know, nice big long one, all done up, that yeah. You know, nice tassel on the end, yeah.
A lot of them though were the kind where you filled in the background and the design was pre-stitched.
No.
Yeah, a lot of them were that way. Yeah.
No. I want to do the fun part. I'll pay somebody to do the background if they want to. Yeah. So that's okay. So ornaments then. There's a real popularity with those. That's of course that's fun, and you know ornaments that can be used year round. I mean, people are really seeing, when it comes to interior decorating, more options other than ornaments on a tree at Christmas time.
Right.
You know,
Halloween is a big holiday, and Thanksgiving, and now the patriotic. There's a couple of the designers have done patriotic sets with it, like I think it's Danji. They have it looks like a gazebo. And for a town, and then all the little standing figures that go with it, like you were watching a parade or something.
Yeah, That's kind of the neat thing about ornaments. You can do that. Well, I mean, Gay Ann Rogers is an excellent example with all of her heart ornaments of all types for all occasions. And there's so many others doing those kinds of things. And you buy a little tree and you change out the ornaments through the seasons, or many people get a basket and just put a bunch of them in a basket and put it on the table. Yeah, lots of options.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So. Sandy, this has been fun. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
I hope I've helped, added something to somebody's life.
Oh, I'm sure you have. Finishing. I'm sure you have. Yep. All right, so it's Sandy's Finishing. You have a Facebook page. And
I don't post very often.
Yeah. But there is one there, and then Sandy's Finishing Touches was google.com. I'll put a link. There'll be a link on the page. It's a long, drawn-out thing. But you can see her work and see the different kinds of things you do. And then give us the title of the book the finishing book, and what is that?
It's called Sandy's Finishing Touches, A Step-by-Step Guide to Finishing Needlework.
Okay.
It's got a picture of my fireplace and a whole bunch of finishing items in front of it.
All right, and that available through Amazon or really any store, any local needlework store can get it for them?
A local needlework store can contact Danji.
Okay.
Company. They're located in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Yeah, okay. All right, so people can get that book. And then read it, right. And then have you finish their stuff anyway. Yeah, we'll take that.
Be more than happy to.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Sandy. Thanks for a little insight. That was fun.
All right, thank you. It was.
Yep, thanks to everyone for listening.